Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of What's It Like, where I interview people from all over about all kinds of different experiences and get a window into what their life might be like. Now, as always, my typical disclaimer, this is one person's story. Somebody else may have a similar experience, but have a different story to tell from it. And that is absolutely okay. We're all individuals. We're just getting a window into what this could be like. And so I'd like to go ahead and welcome my guest for today. Thank you so much for joining us, Adam.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So go ahead and in like a sentence or two, go ahead and tell our listeners what is the story that you're or the experience you're going to be sharing with us today.
So I'm going to be sharing my, I suppose, time with what we begin to call intrusive thoughts.
Okay. Let's start with the basic for anybody who is not who isn't familiar with this. What are intrusive thoughts?
So the kind of everyday thoughts, the things that I think everybody has, but for whatever reason, people with intrusive thoughts struggle to either rationalize them or even begin to worry about the person that they feel like they're becoming or they might come across as or the perception of them in terms of other people's perception of them with the things that they are thinking about or the thoughts that go through their mind. So the kind of really basic way to describe it is if you've ever been walking down a street and you might see, I don't know, maybe something on the floor or something like that. And a thought goes through your head of, oh, should I kick it? And you think, no, because I'm not going to get anything out of it. And you move on and you carry on. That's essentially an intrusive thought. That's like an everyday intrusive thought. The difference with people who get them a lot is that they can be anything from something as little as, oh, yeah, I'm going to go and kick this thing that's left on the street to something maybe even as extreme as something like, what would I do if I really hurt myself now? Or what would I do if, so imagine, you know, you're walking past somebody on the street and you just think, what would happen right now if I tripped this person up, if I pushed this person over? And then you begin to think, why am I thinking like that? Why am I thinking these kinds of thoughts? What does that mean about me? What does that say about the person that I am? And then you get into a little bit of a spiral then thinking, you know, is this a usual thought? Is this something that everybody has? What does it say about you really as a person?
Okay. So for yourself, when did you first start noticing that you had intrusive thoughts and then maybe when did you start becoming maybe worried about them?
It was really when, I would say about a year ago, there was a big thing that happened to me in my life a year ago. I'll kind of summarize it and maybe you might have more questions after it, is I found out last year, so I'm 30 years old now, to kind of put it into perspective a little bit, I found out last year that my dad isn't my biological dad. And that had knock-on effects afterwards. At first, I kind of stuck my head in the sand a little bit, didn't really think too much about it. I wanted nothing to do with the person who it would be considered to be my biological dad. You know, he wasn't around. I didn't even know who this person was. So again, like I stuck my head in the sand a little bit. I ended up watching a film with my wife called Three Identical Strangers, which you might be familiar with. And basically what happens to those guys is they were separated at birth. And two of them found each other through university. And then another one got in contact when he saw their pictures in the newspaper, because at first they thought they were just twins separated at birth. And what it ends up being is that actually they were kind of some sort of weird social experiment where they were separated and they were put in specifically different households and upbringings, one with a poor family, one with a kind of middle class family, and one with a sort of higher upper class family. And the idea there was like, which one is going to have the better quality of life? And afterwards, I was kind of just thinking about it and letting it sink in. And my wife said, "Are you okay?" And that was then when my own head clicked as to I've been lied to my whole life by essentially my family about this whole dad situation. Then I went through kind of a period of what I'm going to refer to as anger, as frustration. To even the point where I had somebody at work, so I'm a teacher, kind of come over to me at work and just say, "Are you okay?" And I just said, "No, not really." And they'd come over because they noticed that there was something wrong. Kind of let loose as to what happened there. told them everything that was going on. And then from there, I began to see a therapist, which was, I think, started just after Christmas. And we were talking about different things in life, and the kind of the after effects of this, I suppose, anger and the way that I was feeling at the time was that I began to have these intrusive thoughts. One thing that I've begun to realize since having the therapy is really helpful because it makes you think about yourself in a completely different way. And it makes you think about how other people might think about you in a different way and how you have control over so much. You don't control the past. You can't control the past. You kind of need to forgive yourself for certain things that you've done in the past. You can't control the future. So don't try and dictate everything right now that might happen in 2 years from now, 2 weeks from now, 2 days from now. And instead just try and focus on what is going on right now and in the moment. And then as well as that, don't be too concerned with the perception of other people, because the image that you have in your head of what other people think about you is typically wrong, because it's a fragment of your imagination. It's a piece that you've puzzled together. It's a little bit of fiction that you've had an idea on and you've rolled with. And it's most times not even the actual case. The intrusive thoughts that kind of came out of that were really, I try and think about which ones I had, but the weird thing that I'm finding with these intrusive thoughts is that once you've got over the cycle of what kind of person does that make me, and then dealing with those thoughts, you kind of forget them. And as weird as they are in that they can kind of encompass your life for weeks, days, sometimes even months, the minute you've dealt with them is the minute that they disappear. And you don't really get them back at all.
Interesting. So yours were, while you can't think of anything specifically with that, yours were connected to identity and perception of identity?
Yeah. So I had a lot of things to do with, so again, like when I started the current job that I'm in, there was a lot of, I think what would have just been anxiety, sort of general anxiety on how I was being perceived by other people. And I was convinced that these other people had a very specific outlook of me. And I would go out of my way to maybe try too hard to try and, I suppose, change that opinion, this opinion of theirs that I'd made up, and thinking that I needed to kind of battle that and fight that. The more specific thing I would say is there's a singer called George Ezra. I'm not sure how famous he is in the US or anything like that, but he has spoken about intrusive thoughts recently on a different podcast. He refers to it as pure O, which I think is something that he's been able to kind of find out a little bit more on. And he described it as an intrusive thought is essentially like having a thought to do something, the kind of compulsion to do something, but not having the physical relief of actually doing that thing. And that the intrusive thought, you know, if you're talking most extreme, thankfully I've not had any of these, but I can imagine that somebody might have an intrusive thought maybe to commit a crime or do something like that. But then if you don't get the physical release of doing it, it then stays in your head and it spirals around in different ways. It can be you're not getting the release, so you can't really let that thought go. You might really want to stick to it and begin to worry about it. You know, there's been a number of different occasions, again, in my job, in my personal life, where I've maybe said something which, you know, it might be true, but it might be harsh, or it might have been a little bit out of place or anything like that. And then afterwards you begin to worry about the kind of response that this person is going to have because of the thing that you've said. And then you begin to make up repercussions in your head of what might happen. And the only way that these things get dealt with is if you actually actively tackle that subject, which might not make sense a little bit, but I suppose what I mean is, say for example I've said something to somebody and I then begin to worry about how they're going to take it. Are they going to go and say something to somebody else? So again, say if I was in work or anything like that, it would be, are they going to go and talk to somebody who is higher up than me? Is it then going to be that I, you know, you'll go to all different realms of extremity of, you know, am I going to lose my job? What happens then if I lose my job? And it's basically, any thought that goes through your head, you think best case scenario, worst case scenario, but then you focus on worst case scenario for most of the time.
Okay, so you've connected a little bit to kind of to anxiety. I'm curious about how intrusive thoughts connect to things like anxiety, or maybe to things like obsessive compulsive disorder. How are these kind of interlinked?
I think it was never really kind of diagnosed or anything like that, but the therapist mentioned that I'm probably somewhere along the line of OCD. And this idea of this kind of obsessive compulsive, and it's if you get, so I've always been a kind of person where if I get an idea in my head of something that I want to do or a task that I want to do, I have to do it right there and then, which is, I suppose, your kind of compulsive side to it. Your obsessive side is that if you get a thought in your head, it won't go away. It won't go away until you've either remedied it, or it won't go away until you have, I suppose, again, to use the same word, tackled it. In terms of anxiety and things like that, they link in a strange way in that you might not think too much about something, and then something might happen, you have a thought, and you begin to worry about where that thought's going to take you. How long? So the way that it works sometimes for me is that if I had a thought go through my head, again, trying to think of one, but let's just speak generally. I would on the one hand, be worried about how long that thought was going to stay in my head.
Yeah.
And when the point was going to be that I could relax again. And then it was also, do I believe the thought? Do I not believe the thought? And then it from there, it was kind of like, if you believe it, then it then creates more issues, whether it's true or not. If you don't believe it and you kind of have that mental strength to kind of get over it, then that's more power to you. I've began to be a bit more able to challenge these ideas that come into my head, to challenge these things that kind of flow in every now and again, and deal with them differently. That's come from doing a little bit of reading. There was a book, which unfortunately I don't have with me right now, so I can't quote off who it is, but the idea of that you've got three different voices in your head. You've got the voice which is almost like false confidence or false kind of truth, where you might think something and you'll get the little voice that says, oh, it's all right, don't worry about it, it's fine. Then you'll get the voice which is like almost like, you know, the little angel and the devil that sit on your shoulders. You'll then get the one that says, yeah, but what if it's not fine? What if it's not fine? And then it, essentially what can happen then is that you then get into a fight between these two voices of going, no, but everything's going to be fine because this is going to happen, then this is going to happen. And then the other voice says, but what if that doesn't happen? What happens then? What happens if it goes to the worst way? The third voice, and the voice that since I read this, I've been trying to keep in practice of, is just witnessing that conversation take place, almost as if you're a bystander and you're watching it, or you're listening to this conversation and you're taking everything in and you're taking both sides. And then afterwards you just go, okay, this is the compromise. And actually that is better in a sense, because while you're not getting the best case scenario, you're also not getting the worst case scenario. You're actually just getting, I suppose, the real life scenario of what is actually going on. The anxiety thing is, again, something that I've been dealing with for a long time, something that was triggered about 5 years ago now, when I went into a job that I wasn't fully ready for. And I was really worried about how, again, I suppose how I was going to be perceived. And essentially I'd got to the point of, it sounds a bit cliche, but I'd got to the point of, you know, how your body has a fight or flight response. In that situation, instead of fighting, I flew. I left the job. I walked away from it. I then dealt with anxiety probably for the majority of the rest of that year. And then kind of died down a little bit, shot right back up again when my daughter was born. So immediately after my daughter was born, it was kind of, okay, now I'm really worried. What do we do now? Are we, you know, can we look after this child, for example? And then again, you know, it dies down a little bit. shot back up again when I was when I lost my job, when a school closed down that I was in. And again, that then led into the job that I was in now. But I think that was the kind of hangover of that anxiety. Whereas actually for a long time, I've been what I refer to as being settled. And which is that I'm not really kind of worrying about anything too much. I've not got too many ideas flowing around my head or anything like that. Lockdown and the whole coronavirus and COVID-19. And so for us over here, we ended up basically being in full government lockdown. Mm-hmm. We couldn't really see any of our friends. We couldn't really see any of our family. I had to start teaching lessons basically in the room that I'm sat in now, which is just my spare bedroom, on a computer over Microsoft Teams. And I think that just exacerbated the whole thing of anxiety and just being worried about certain things and thinking too much. And again, being maybe left with your own thoughts a little bit too much. So that's a kind of generalized idea of it. But I think OCD is the one, I suppose, label, if you want to call it a label, which I probably fit under most. And it's definitely much more than that kind of society assumption that you just like things in a neat order.
Yeah.
While I do like things in a neat order, it's not just that. There's much more to it than that.
How much, it sounds like a lot of the intrusive thoughts end up being not so much even just the thought itself, but then thoughts about the thoughts. How much of it does end up being worrying and about the thoughts themselves as opposed to the initial thought that enters your head?
I think a lot of it is worrying about the thought and then worrying about what is going to come later. Because I think there's been a couple of instances recently where I've not said something, or maybe I have said something, or maybe I've thought about saying something, and I've really stuck to the idea of, but what then if that happens? And what then if that happens? And you know that you're going to worry about it later, so don't bother doing it yet. And it does become a little bit of a, to use a word I've used previously, spiral.
Yeah.
There was one yesterday that I just felt like, I just thought this is ridiculous. And I was looking at something on my phone, I was Googling something, and then all of a sudden I had this idea where I'd forgotten what I was doing, and I began really to worry about what I was doing. And then the kind of time passed a little bit and I'd almost forgotten it. And then all of a sudden I remembered that I was worried 20 minutes ago about something that I forgot to do. And then that then can just become, it's like you're worrying about a worry, essentially.
Yeah.
Which again, it just goes into a little bit of a spiral. And there was one the other day where, so the kind of podcast that I do, which I'll mention just a little bit.
Yeah.
is about films, and is about, because I'm a film studies teacher, so it's to support my students, and then I'm kind of getting like almost a hobby out of it as well at the same time. We're recording a couple of podcasts next week on certain different things, and I wanted to catch up with a couple of films just to refresh my memory. And I'd looked through a list and I just thought, right, there's two films there that ideally I need to watch this weekend. And then I began to think, oh, but what if we go out this weekend? What if we go and do this? What if then we go and do shopping? Or what if we go and do something else? And then I'd forgotten what the thing I was even trying to plan into my weekend was. And then just began to worry about the fact that I'd forgotten it. So it's really strange. It's kind of just going backwards and forth. But I think that comes with possibly the compulsive side of feeling like if you've got an idea, you have to do it there and then. And that in my life has had its positives and has had its negatives. It's had its positives in that I know at work now, I have the reputation of being a hard worker, of somebody who does things really well and does and plans things really well. But then that comes at a cost of, but sometimes you'll work too hard. Sometimes you won't leave things. Sometimes you'll do more than you need to. One of the big things when I went to therapy and was speaking to the therapist was I'm struggling to relax, which was a big thing, which was, trying to find things to do to relax. And what I mean by relax isn't just the idea of So, I mean, you would assume that somebody's, you know, relaxation would be, oh, they're going to go and watch a film. Or they're going to go and play on their Xbox. They're going to go and, you know, like recently what I've been doing is doing jigsaws. But that their kind of physical relaxation, the mental relaxation comes when you're actually at peace with the idea of relaxing. Because there have been times where, again, like just to use an example that I've just used, I would turn my Xbox on thinking that I'm about to relax, but then begin to think about different things. And then you're not paying attention. You're not paying attention to the thing that you should be doing. And it just, it essentially becomes a bit of a false relaxation method.
Okay. Yeah. So is there, have you found in general that there are things that, that make them worse, either like more frequent or more intense? Is it stress related? Are there things in your life that really kind of launch these into being big?
Yeah, it's definitely when, and I always try and think of it as like a foundation of your worry and your anxiety. And I suppose for me, your intrusive thoughts are built on a foundation of worry of something else. So I think the whole thing with my daughter, when I got anxiety after she was born, was obviously, you know, being worried about whether or not we had everything. And that soon subsided after she was born. And maybe, you know, she was a week old and everything calmed down and you just kind of get used to it. It's a part of life. There was a big point a couple of years ago where my mum was diagnosed with breast cancer. And again, that wasn't my reaction to that. I didn't cry. I didn't show any emotion, really. It was just kind of like, okay, but, you know, you'll fight it and it'll be fine and people have survived from it and it's fine and we'll move on from there. But then what happened is that that compounded itself in me waking up in the middle of the night and thinking, oh my God, this student hasn't done enough work for him to get a good grade in his exam at the end of the year. So now I'm really worried that my students are going to fail their exams. And it took me a while to kind of take a step back and think, actually, what are you worrying about there? Are you worrying about your mum? Are you worrying about the student? Would you be worrying about the student if you didn't already have this other worry about your mum? And I think that a lot of the stuff that came out through lockdown was maybe worrying, sort of, again, knowing that, you know, you're teaching students over basically Skype or, you know, Microsoft Teams, Zoom or whatever it was. And are they really understanding it? Are they really going to do well? Are they going to do well in their exams that are going to come up next year? And then that compounding with, you can't really see anybody, you can't really go out, you can't really do anything. So it kind of lays that foundation of worry. So usually what happens with me is, and again, my wife started picking up on it a little bit. I have a little bit of a nervous tic where my leg just shakes if I'm sat down, if I'm thinking about something. And she'll say, you know, what are you thinking about? And all that kind of stuff. Is that, if I begin to worry about something, if I feel like I'm getting out of control with worry about something, there's usually something else that has just gone on, or there's usually something else that has kind of crept through, which, you know, can be, family things. Because again, I think with the whole dad situation and the whole kind of biological dad thing and the anger that came from that is that I very, you know, kind of purposely said to somebody at work when I was talking to them about it, I said, I'm in classrooms with students, and I'm beginning to notice that my threshold, my leniency, my way, the way that I am with students in my teaching is a lot, I have a lot shorter fuse than I used to have. And that I would be basically, in, like, you know, previous to that, you know, one student would get a couple of warnings and then we would then put the sanction in place. Whereas this time it's literally first time sanction is gone. And what is the true purpose there? Is it that I'm knowingly doing that, or is it that I'm going into work, or that I'm going into anything that I'm doing already a little bit frustrated? And then that's kind of coming out in the wrong way. And again, the therapy was really useful to kind of see how you can kind of strip these things away a little bit and really think about what is actually going on at that point.
So as you've kind of been working through this, talk through what do you do? You know, a lot of this you talk about is about getting to the underlying reason of the worry and kind of calming that. But what have you learned to do in the moment as an intrusive thought comes to you and then thoughts about the thoughts start coming to you? What do you do in the moment to kind of ground yourself back in where you need to be?
It's the idea of kind of taking a breath and thinking. That's the kind of first thing. Try and give yourself a deep breath. Try and separate everything else out from what you're doing. So, for example, if I was in the middle of doing some work and for whatever reason a thought would run through my head or there would be something that I'd be worried about, I would just kind of stop and just think. The one useful thing, and it is a bit of a cliche because people have said it all the time and it was something that people would say to me and I just thought that can't solve everything, is talking to people, is talking, you know, to my wife. The one thing that weirdly has happened and has kind of changed the way that I am and the personality that I have is that I no longer can lie or like to lie. Not that I ever did like it, but if, like, you know, you do the little white lie every now and again as a bit of a practical joke and a prank and things like that. Mm-hmm. But if somebody was to say to me, what are you thinking about? Or, you know, what have you done over here? You know, anything like that. I refer to this as my filter a little bit. I feel like my filter's gone in that I've started straight talking a little bit more in terms of telling people really how I'm feeling, which is something that I never used to do. And I think, again, that compounds anxiety in that you're not doing yourself any favors if maybe you're stressed out at work, maybe there are a couple of things that you know that you could deal with, but instead of, I suppose, being that person who looks like they're then complaining, so for example, I'm just thinking of, like, if you were asked to do something and you thought it wasn't your job to do it or you didn't have enough time to do it, I was always the person where I would just go, yeah, it's fine, don't worry, I'll get it done. I'm still a little bit like that, but recently, you know, I was speaking to my manager and it was a case of, I don't think that's my job to do that specific task. I think you're a better place to do that task. And I think there are a couple of things that we need to kind of get straightened out between ourselves. And initially people think that takes courage to do something like that and to kind of speak your mind and make sure that you're kind of almost fighting your own battle or fighting your own corner. What it actually is selflessness to yourself. You're not being selfish to yourself because, and again, there's a good thing that keeps coming up every now and again when we're talking about mental health is sometimes the way that you talk to yourself, you wouldn't talk to anybody else in that way. And if you knew somebody who spoke to you in the way that you speak to yourself, you wouldn't be friends with them. You wouldn't like them because ultimately, again, we can be our own worst enemies and we can be the kind of point of going, well, I just know that I just need to do this. And, you know, why are you thinking these stupid things? Why are you worried so much about what that person thinks and what that person thinks? And actually, the kind of, as you're almost having this conversation with yourself, you begin to calm down a little bit. And you're talking through things. So again, like with the whole, I suppose, how are you dealing with it? How are you managing with it? There's a lot of things where I will just, as soon as a kind of worry goes into my head, what I'm finding the best thing to do now, and I suppose I'm fortunate that I have my wife in my life and things like that, is I just tell her, I just say to her, this has annoyed me, or this has worried me, or I'm thinking about this for whatever reason. And then straight from that point, you then get the kind of opinion of somebody else. You get the opinion of somebody who isn't in your own head and is you know, running things down in a spiral and thinking both sides of it. So you can really kind of hash out what actually, you know, needs to happen here. So that was an interesting one to think about, of like how you deal with it. And to be honest, I don't think I deal with it the same every single time. I think there are a couple of times where maybe I do get carried away with it a little bit and just think, like, you know, da, da, da. But then there are smaller versions where, or I suppose smaller worries where if they come flying through your head, you kind of just go, right, don't focus too much on that because that's a little bit silly. Mm-hmm. And then you will then move on.
Okay. Yeah. I'm curious, have you connected with other people who have who also have intrusive thoughts? Have you been able to find other folks who to kind of talk this through with?
No, not really. Again, you know, the therapist was helpful in terms of that you could tell that they were knowledgeable and you could tell that they'd, you know, they'd almost spoken to other people in similar situations. Again, the one thing to always think about in terms of intrusive thoughts, OCD, any kind of mental health, is that it's never just you. It feels like it is just you a lot. And it feels like, again, I suppose the thing with intrusive thoughts is that, you know, if you get a really wild one, you think, how I'm the only person in the world who must be thinking something as, you know, dark, as horrible, as anything like that. And yeah, you just, I mean, the strangest one recently, it's not like a dark one or anything like that. Because again, they've been kind of subsided since I started the therapy, which has been helpful.
Yeah.
Is that, so the whole podcast, Reddit kind of guest exchange thing.
Yeah.
I answered somebody else's post about going on there and being a guest, and it was quite a funny podcast. I can't remember the name of it, but it was just random questions, really random questions, things like, you know, what would Joseph Stalin's aftershave smell like, and things like that, really daft things. And the final question was, if you had to basically have sexual intercourse with any vegetable, what would it be? And on the one hand, I was like, that is such a weird question. Like, I don't even, and in my head, I was like, refuse to answer it. And I kind of did, but then at the same time, I kind of didn't, because I said, that's such a weird question. I don't even know what to think of. So then the guy who asked me the question said, the general answer that we get quite a lot is a watermelon. And I was like, okay. And I said, well, if that's the consensus, I'll go with that. And then for whatever reason, I then couldn't shake out of my head that, because I like to share things with my students of things that I'm doing, so they're all familiar with my podcast and things like that. I just then began to think of, can you imagine if my students listen to a podcast like that not only in more expletive ways than I just did, refers to me having sexual intercourse with a watermelon, and then both the opinion that might have from them on me, the opinion that might then get to the other staff in the school of them on me, and the repercussions that will have of my reputation in the school and of my job. So I just had to message the guy and just say, can you take that last one out? Because I feel like it would be inappropriate for me to then share that with my students.
Yeah.
And, but that before I'd got an answer back, from the guy who, you know, very kind, very thankful, and just did it straight away, totally understood, is in my head I'm going, oh, but imagine if that goes out, and imagine what happens when that goes out, and imagine when, you know, somebody hears it, and you just spiral into that then, which, you know, I suppose is this, it's not necessarily an intrusive thought, but I suppose it's the other idea of the obsessive side of OCD.
Yeah.
In that you won't let that go away. You feel like you know how it's going to pan out. And there's going to be no other, that I suppose that is the actual thing of, you feel like in your head, you know exactly how something is going to pan out. That first of all, if you let it play out and something different happens, you'll be really surprised that something different happens, or you will try and fight every other way to make sure that it doesn't pan out in the way that you think it's going to. And you'll worry about it way too much.
Yeah. Okay. So as this podcast goes out, there might be some people who have a little bit of understanding of this, who maybe have had a diagnosis of and worked through some of this with therapy, or somebody who might have just started out and be like, wait a minute, I think this might be me. And then on the flip side, there are people who have never dealt with this and maybe never will, and just have no understanding of what this is like. So I'd love for you to say something to each of these two groups, one who maybe has some understanding of this, and what would you say to them, either a word of encouragement or a word of something that you've learned. And on the flip side, what would you just say to somebody who just has no understanding of this? What would you want them to understand about this?
I think to the people who have been through it, who are dealing through it, who may be similar to me, every now and again, and again, I suppose this is general anxiety as well, is that you will have dark periods. You will have periods of time where you find it difficult. You find it really difficult to kind of think of any other way out, and that maybe you're thinking of when is the next day going to come where you feel fine, if fine is even a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is just to kind of keep going and keep and try and most of all remember what works well for you. There's no kind of prescriptive thing of what works well for everybody. Some of the things that work for me in terms of helping me relax and helping me kind of really unwind and try and just, you know, disperse is I've been really fortunate to find this hobby of starting doing podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I've been really fortunate in that for whatever reason, Lego works for me. So building little Lego sets. I recently did the Friends one. That was a good couple of days. And then, you know, I've taken to jigsaws as well. Because again, I think it's just the idea of starting something and seeing it finished, seeing the end result of it being finished. But again, you know, if you've dealt with it, if you are dealing with it, I think the best thing to do is find somebody that you can talk to. It doesn't need to be, you know, it doesn't need to be a family member. It doesn't need to be somebody that you are really close to, but it needs to be someone who you know is actually going to listen. And what I mean by actually going to listen is that I feel like we all have these people in our lives where we you know, we like them, we love them, we hang out with them. But in terms of actually listening and taking it in and wanting to kind of reciprocate that conversation, they're few and far between. And I know that I've got few and far between. I'm fortunate enough that my wife listens and will take things in and will kind of give me the opposite side of it. I'm fortunate that my two friends that I went to school with and grew up with will do that as well. I wouldn't necessarily go to my parents with anything like this. I wouldn't necessarily go to grandparents or uncles or anything like that, because again, it's all to do with who you're sharing your story with and who you're sharing your thing, you know, your kind of your experiences with.
Yeah.
I think for the people who I haven't dealt with it, I would say first and foremost, if you know somebody who's dealing with anything on the kind of wide spectrum of mental health, try and be there for them. Try and be there to listen to them. One of the greatest chats I had, so again, you know, I mentioned my friends just a minute ago. I've been friends with these two guys since we were in what we call year 8. So you're looking at, you know, we were 13 years old, so almost 17 years, things like that. And one of my friends, Daniel, he is just, his wife's pregnant. And it's the first time they've got pregnant. Well, no, it's not the first time they got pregnant. It's the first time that they've gone further than a couple of weeks, because they've lost quite a few, in the same way that me and my wife lost one before my daughter was born. And they've struggled with it. They've really struggled with it. My friend Daniel sometimes is a little bit of a closed box, in that he's really kind of a tough nut to crack and he won't really tell you how he's feeling.
Mm-hmm.
We had a really good chat at the start of August about him, about the pregnancy, about how he was feeling about certain things. And then the flip side to that, he asked, I suppose the kind of difference is somebody asks you how you're feeling, it's because they genuinely care. And I don't mean the kind of when you see your workmates and you're saying morning and you're asking them if they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're having this conversation, and to the point where I thought the majority of the conversation was just going to be about him, and I was asking about him. And then all of a sudden, he just turned around and he just said, how are you getting on with the therapy? How are you getting on with, you know, your thoughts and your you know, you're calming down and things like that. And obviously by that point, I'd done my however many sessions it was and kind of just done that. So I suppose on the one hand, people who aren't dealing with it, be there for somebody who is. Be an ear for somebody who is. And I think as well, like, just to go back to the people who are dealing with it, it's helped me to read up on some things. It's helped me to kind of do a little bit of research. But what, I don't know if I'm, obviously it's the same as everybody else. Sometimes I find that if I Google intrusive thoughts, or if I Google something to do with it or how to deal with them or things like that, it can make it worse. And it can make it to the point where you think, oh, well, Google says that this thing works for somebody, so why isn't it working for me? And again, it's because it's not one size fits all. It's not that everything works for everybody. You've got to find your own little niche. It would be interesting, admittedly, to come across somebody who's kind of had these things before, because I haven't. and I haven't. You know, the kind of only interaction I've had, if you can call it an interaction, is listening to the George Ezra podcast that he did. And because that weirdly made a lot of sense. And I retweeted it. And my wife saw the kind of little snippet video of it. And she said, is that what you think your kind of thing is? And I said, yeah. And then she listened to the whole thing in the car the other day when I was at work and she was doing something. And she says, oh, I listened to the George Ezra podcast. I said, okay, what do you think about it? And she went, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's really similar to what, you know, you're kind of the way that you are, I suppose, at the minute, and the way that you can kind of really obsess over things. Weirdly, though, I would say I've felt the best I've felt in a long time since probably the end of August. And I think that really coincides with me going back to work.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm at the point where I'm back into my routine. I'm working, you know, I get into work for about 8 o'clock in the morning. I'll usually finish between 3 and 4. I'll do some couple of things at home, and then I'll just have a little bit of a chill at home. And it's that routine that helps. So again, I know that some people like to kind of just do their own thing. I think routine helps everybody. And that might be another good thing to consider.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, before we wind down, was there anything that you wanted to make sure and get to on this podcast and share about this experience that we haven't talked about yet?
I don't think so. I think the kind of key thing is that, again, everything's different. Everything's different for everybody.
Yeah.
So again, you know, in terms of mental health, it's one of these things that for a very long time people didn't want to talk about, and that nobody really did talk about. And I think it does affect everybody in absolutely different ways. I think so. My experience is I was convinced for a while that I had depression, and then I began to realize that actually it's not just as simple as depression. You could have depressive episodes. And I think first and foremost, actually, I think people try and look for a label, and maybe a label for themselves to try and make themselves feel better, and then know that actually this is the thing that I have. But I always like to think of mental health in the same way as if you're familiar with the autistic spectrum, where you will have people on this spectrum. And the idea of a spectrum is that you have people who are the extreme side and you have people that are at the lower side. I think everybody in terms of mental health is on the lower side, no matter who you are and what you are, because everyone will go through depressive episodes. Mm-hmm. Everyone will go through having butterflies in their stomach about being really nervous for something like a job interview. People will go through sharp bouts of anxiety. What it then builds is that you will then have extended episodes or extended anxiety, or then you go into things like OCD and things like that. And you can't have one without the other. So again, you know, you'll go through depressive episodes. Low mood is another one for me, that for every now and again, I might just dip in mood, and, you know, my wife will say to me, are you okay? What's wrong with you? And I'll just say, I just feel a bit low, to be honest, and I can't really explain why. And that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, that you can't be happy all the time, but then at the same time, it can't rain all the time and it can't be bad all the time. One thing that really kind of struck a chord with me recently is, so obviously, you know, my friend's kind of, he's gone through his own stuff, and then when we went back into work and we were kind of talking as staff, the principal of the school very kind of kindly, and I suppose as well showed a bit of courage doing it, shared with us that she deals with anxiety quite a lot. And she said that, you know, it might not be something that you're fully aware of, or it might be something that you think, well, yeah, we kind of understand that. But it just goes to show that everybody, no matter who you are, no matter what job you do, you will go through certain points and certain things like this. And it's fine as long as you're talking about it.
Yeah.
And as long as you've got people to talk about it with, which, again, isolation is a whole other thing. And that would be just finding the right places. There are tons of different places out there. Again, social media, when it's done right, can be a fantastic thing. But there are helplines all over the place, and it's better to just talk to somebody.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all that. Before we go, I do want to give you a chance to, yeah, plug your own stuff, your podcast, social media, anything that you want to be able to share with our listeners.
Yeah, so again, when we started into lockdown, I was really worried about my students and I was really worried about the kind of learning that they were missing out on. And I was thinking about how can I get this to them? How can I get the learning to them? So I started a podcast called Farrand on Film, which is my surname. So it's F-A-R-R-A-N-D on Film. And basically, it kind of started off as like I'll supplement their learning that they're getting lessons. And then what it's kind of become from that is, for me, I suppose a thing of well-being, I suppose a hobby, and also for friends at work, because what we've managed to do is we've done like little top tens, so like 80s films and things like that, and we've got people from work, you know, onto Microsoft Teams, just all just having a really good chat about films, just showing things that we like, and then just releasing them. And a really good thing happened today, actually, where I walked into a classroom, and I had a student say something like, "Oh, sir, I heard your stuff on Spotify." And I just thought, are you joking? Like, have you heard something else? Are you trying to, what we refer to as taking the mick? Are you trying to have a joke with me? What are you talking about? And they went, no, we heard the stuff that you've put on Spotify. And then I clicked, and it's that the podcast is on Spotify, and they'd been listening to it, and that they listened to it over the summer. And then this one student was saying that she'd listened to all these past episodes. She started reeling off episode titles to me that gone back and listened to. And like, you know, we'd done a chat about Denis Villeneuve and we'd done a top 10 on this and we were talking about Chadwick Boseman and we did things like this. And it kind of blew my mind a little bit. I think more than the fact that obviously people are just listening to it, which is obviously nice. But the fact that these students weren't even my, they're kind of my students because they go to my school and things like that, but they weren't my film study students. They were students that didn't even take the subject, but they were just listening to it. So again, I'm glad that they're getting something out of that. So that podcast you can kind of get everywhere. It's on iTunes, Spotify, all those other kind of good places that Anchor just automatically sends to. And that's Farrand on Film. So it's F-A-R-R-A-N-D on Film. I'm on Twitter at Farrand on Film as well, so you can always find me on there. I'm always up for having a good chat about anything. And other than that, yeah, we've got a Facebook page, which again is Farrand on Film, but yeah, that's pretty much the big thing for me at the minute.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, thank you again so much for being willing to share your experience with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, folks, that is our episode. I will be back next week to interview somebody else and to find out how you can become a guest on the podcast and share your own experience. You can follow me on Twitter at @PodWhatsItLike, or you can email me at whatsitlikethepodcast@gmail.com. I'll be back next week interviewing somebody else about something completely different, and we'll see you then.